2-3.
As well as what was available under federal law under DEI.
Suggesting that this isn't necessary?
Well, here. Transwest Pipeline Liability Fund, $100 million, may be sued for claims arising from discharge as well.
Today, the 9th, but today Tuesday. Tuesday the 9th of May, and the time is 12:37 in the afternoon. Pursuant to notice, 24-hour notice having been given pursuant to the rules, the House Judiciary Committee, please come to order. We have a quorum of the committee. We have Representative Ellis, Representative Davidson, Co-Chairman Gall, Representative Davis, and myself, Representative Gruenberg. We have one bill on the calendar today, Senate Bill 255. The bill that's before us is the Judiciary CS for that bill. Who will be here on behalf of the sponsor? Sir, would you like to come up and you can sit here, give us your name and a brief statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Gray. I'm a legislative assistant to Senator Kelly, who is the prime sponsor of Senate Bill 255. This bill was introduced in response to the Valdez situation. The intent of the bill is to provide a quick system for those people that have claims in this accident to expedite it. It's gone through some changes. The Attorney General's office here can speak towards the legal ramifications of that. Let me just draw your attention to two things that we feel is of interest. And this is Section 4 and Section 5. It's the definition of damages, which is fitting, or most fitting, to the Valdez situation, where you have environmental damages. You have fishermen who may proceed have loss of livelihood types of things, and there are also some subsistence questions there. We think that that's a nice feature of it. And then secondly, in Section 4, the future claims thing. You go to an arbitration, you have a thing, you settle it, and that's it. This future claims opens up the opportunity that you may settle right now on something that you know suffered damage, yet you have no idea what future damages like that. So it allows for, again, probably the best example is a fisherman. And we think that that's valuable. And I'd like to conclude that, unless there's any other questions, and really rely on the Department of Law's support of the bill.
Like thank you, Mr. Gray. Questions for Mr. Gray? Representative Gall, then, do you have a question?
No, I'm just missing materials. Yeah.
Well, Representative,
I've got.
I just would like to know why the bill is considered necessary.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We're working off of 6-1164M.
Right. That's correct. That's correct. Mr. Gray?
Mr. Chairman, to the answer to Representative Gall, and again, I would rely on the Department of Law's thing. I believe that there are several ways that we can go to arbitration right now. The courts can establish arbitration panels, and indeed, Trans-Alaska Pipeline law, federal law, can establish arbitration thing. But I believe in the case that I know in the federal case like that, particularly if you're looking at the damages definitions, this is a better definition of what is arbitrable. And I think that perhaps it also fits the court situation. But that is not a, what I'd call a definitive answer. That's my knowledge.
Further questions? If not, thank you.
Question,
yes, of course, Representative Davis.
Regarding Section 4, how difficult is it to present new evidence that could not have been ascertained as reasonable effort at the time the prior claim was arbitrated? I guess Mr. Mertz is the one that should answer that. I mean, it seems to me there's, something tells me I'm uncomfortable about future claims in Section 4.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Gray?
Again, I respectfully would rather have the Department of Law respond to that. I might add one other thing. The major change in this bill from what the original was is to have the courts choose the arbiters rather than the governor choose five people or something like that. Art Snowden has a zero fiscal note as far as the impact of this bill. I think they can do it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm additional question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davidson.
The impetus for this act came from where?
It came from, frankly, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Representative Pettijohn put a bill like this, a similar bill, in the House side. If you look at the original of Senate Bill 255, it's word for word. It languished for a while in Senate Judiciary, and Senate Judiciary took it up and did what we think a credible job rewriting it. And then recently, as our understanding, the Department of Law, as well as the court system, see that there's value in this legislation.
We held a hearing on the Pettijohn. Yeah. Yes.
But I don't recall what the industry position was on the Pettijohn.
Well, it never got that far. Representative Pettijohn talked informally with the Department of Law and decided not to press the issue here and let the Senate bill go forward, so we never had testimony.
So what is the industry position then?
Go ahead, Mr. Ray.
Mr. Chairman, the industry position was not real happy with the original version, neither was the governor's office. For them to be appointing arbiters and also might be seeking claims was a conflict for them. There were other provisions in that that the industry made known that they really weren't happy with. Any kind of arbitration, there's got to be two people agreed to arbitrate or it doesn't work. But it's our understanding that they, although maybe not happy, that this is acceptable. Now that's, you know, how these things are. That's by, you kind of get the body language and maybe a conversation that I could, would not be, I don't think that there's any record or I would present to you anything defensible.
Do you know if I can?
Of course.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. What are the industry problems with this bill?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Gray.
You know, I don't think we're, I'm not sure we're recording.
Maybe you speak louder?
Well, it's getting a bit. Do you have to have the play down as well?
I wouldn't think, I don't know.
It's turning.
It's turning.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's turning.
But that isn't showing.
Just wait a minute. Okay. Now, we're back on the record. Mr. Gray, your answer.
No, we're on the record.
Mr. Davidson, I really think that your chairman could better answer that question than really what I could offer you.
Me?
The question was, you know, will the industry go in and use this thing on, you know, any kind of arbitration? I really can't speak for that.
You're not expecting me to answer that because I don't know.
No, I don't care who answers it.
Perhaps the Department of Law could really speak.
Let's get Mr. Mertz up here. Thank you very much, Mr. Gray. Unless there's burning issues for Mr. Gray, we have Mr. Mertz. I'm going to do something that's fairly unusual. I'm going to ask, start off by leaving you a few questions I'd like you to ask. I have three questions for you, Mr. Mertz. First question, is there a problem here under the constitutional provision that prohibits local or special legislation if general legislation could be made more applicable?
I believe not, simply because it does apply to all claims by anyone arising out of the one incident. The fact that it involves one incident.
That's my question.
Is in the category, like, for instance, the
any of the other bills that we're dealing with?
Well, those or the earthquake legislation following the Great Quake.
I see. Do we need to have special findings or a purpose section to put in here to support that?
I don't believe so. The purpose is obvious, and its applicability to all claimants is also obvious.
Second question. Is there any infringement on the right to jury trial on the part of the defendant? There's a difference, a fundamental difference between this and the Uniform Arbitration Act, in that the Uniform Arbitration Act cannot be called into play unless both parties agree to arbitrate. Here you can get a court order requiring a party to arbitrate. That was one of the problems with the mandatory arbitration provisions in the Senate Bill 366, the tort reform bill a few years ago. Is there an impingement on the defendant's right to jury trial here?
I don't believe it is mandatory. I believe that the potential defendant can strike off all possible names and can hence decline to participate in it whatsoever.
Here it says may apply to the superior court in writing for arbitration.
Right.
It doesn't indicate that the defendant may object to arbitration.
No, you're right. It doesn't say it. But then if you look at subsection B on section 2, it says they can cross off all the names objected to. And it appears to me that there is nothing in here, no provision that permits the court or the claimant to go ahead and force arbitration when the defendant declines to.
I understand your interpretation. If that is the interpretation, is that the intent of the sponsor, Mr. Gray?
The intent of the sponsor is to help out the aggrieved person.
A specific question. Is it the intent of the sponsor that the defendant in the lawsuit may decline to arbitrate?
Right.
then I think we should not have to go through that tortuous kind of legal interpretation, and we should have a sentence, and I'd like you to draft it while we're sitting here in a couple of minutes, or Andy, if you would, in section one, at the beginning of the presentation of claims, that would say the defendant may decline to arbitrate. Possibly we simply add that as a second sentence there. That way there is no question if that's the intent. And I will, at the appropriate time, offer that as an amendment. I'm just putting that on the table. The defendant may decline to arbitrate. And not because I think that necessarily that's the greatest public policy, but I think there are severe jury problems if we don't do that. And since everybody's agreed that that's the intent, I think we've got to make it clear. Third question.
Mr. Chairman, if I may interrupt you. Yeah. Why would there be severe jury problems if we...
Because you have a claim over $20 for damages. And under the state constitution, there is a constitutional right to a jury trial in a civil case like that. No questions. I mean, that's just a fundamental right. Wouldn't you agree,
Sorry,
Mr. Burns?
Right.
Okay, third question. With respect to paragraph 3E found at the bottom of page 2, where it indicates that the arbitrator or panel may not provide that the expenses or fees of the person against whom the claim was brought may be paid. It looks to me like they can, under some circumstances, only award attorney's fees in favor of the claimant, not in favor of the defendant. Are there equal protection problems with that?
There are equal protection problems. On the other hand, the whole system is intended to address only one type of claim, in other words, claims against people responsible for the spill. So to the extent
allegedly responsible.
Right. Well, whoever they turn out to be, if they're responsible, the claim is good.
You could bring a claim against somebody. It's not only potentially here against Exxon, but you could bring a claim against defendant X, presumably, as long as it allegedly arose out of the spill itself. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking so much, folks, about the merits. I'm talking about, this was my third constitutional question, and my question is sub E there constitutional, since you don't provide that the fees and costs could be awarded against either party?
I could make an argument either way. There is a potential problem.
Do you feel it's worth amending to say it could be awarded against the non-prevailing party?
It would certainly eliminate that problem.
What would the sponsor feel about that?
Mr. Chairman, these front two pages is really the work of the our own judiciary. I mean, you ask Chris.
You're neutral. Okay. At the appropriate time, I'll offer that as an amendment simply to eliminate a constitutional problem. If we're passing a bill on the last day of the session, I want it to be squeaky clean so nobody can raise a constitutional issue. Yes, other questions? That's all of mine. Representative Davis.
I'm not really, I don't really understand the issue, and I'd be more comfortable if you, the arbitrator or panel may not provide that a claimant may pay any expenses or fees of a person against.
I assume that they're talking about costs and attorney's fees there. Is that correct?
Yes.
What we're saying here is that there's jurisdiction only to award costs and fees against the claimant, I mean against the defendant, not against the claimant. And normally, in order to avoid constitutional problems, the court has to be, or the arbitration, whatever the procedure is, has to be free to award costs and fees one way or the other or against neither. You can't just favor one over the other.
Under the current law, under the Uniform Arbitration Act, basically, there is the arbitrators may make the loser pay the costs.
That's okay, because it could be the plaintiff or the defendant.
Right.
You can't say only the plaintiff can collect fees. There's constitutional problems in doing that.
I see, and that's the way it's specified here.
That's the way it's specified there. And yeah. I will intend to offer an appropriate amendment at the time, because if we are going to pass a bill out, I want it to be clean constitutionally.
Well,
other questions, Representative
Davis?
Take your time.
It says the arbitrator panel may not provide that a claimant pay any expenses or fees against the person whom the claimant.
The defendant. Only the plaintiff can pay fees.
My question has to do with this legislation, and given the fact that it is the last hour, and we probably I know you noticed this, but do we have all the players here so we can make sure we have the adequate hearing whether to proceed ahead, or is this something that we really need to do this year? I guess that's my question.
I would defer. Do you want to answer that, Mr. Mertz, or Mr. Gray? Is there anyone else to testify on the bill besides the two of you? Mr. Gray, why don't you pull up a chair here so we got you here at the table and the tape recorder can pick you up. Doug, move down a little bit there. Okay. Question. Do we need to have the bill this year, Mr. Gray?
It is our understanding that Department of Law would like to have this bill.
Is that correct?
We think it would help in some circumstances. It's not on our number one priority list.
In some circumstances.
Do you wish to elaborate, or Mr. Representative Gall, do you wish to question?
Yeah, I apologize, but I don't know how to deal with that answer.
Mr. Burns.
Everything would do,
would help in some circumstances.
What the bill would do is to provide a fairly expeditious and inexpensive means of litigating a claim without going through the full judicial process. That's basically all it accomplishes. And I do have to say that if basically the attorney fee and cost provisions are made both ways, then there isn't much that this bill does that the current Uniform Arbitration Act doesn't do. That's the big difference between this act and the current law.
I'm sorry, what is
the attorney fee?
Yeah, what is the big difference between them?
That this basically says that costs and attorney fees can be paid to the claimant if the claimant prevails, mm-hmm. whereas the Uniform Arbitration Act provides for two-way assessment of costs, and although you can assess attorney fees, normally it's not done in arbitration. That's the only real substantive difference between this and the current law.
And that seems to be the issue that raised the constitutional question as well.
Yes, and that's the conundrum.
That's rather problematic. What happens if a person brings a claim?
I've got Representative Gall, then Davis, then Davis.
What happens if a person brings a claim and they are not satisfied, they appeal half?
Yes, either side can appeal.
I'm sorry, what is the procedure for appeal if they're not satisfied?
You just take a direct appeal to the Superior Court.
Mr. Merch, just if I may interrupt, I see something else here too. That this provides notice to these people and a speedy method of getting into the Uniform Arbitration Act, because these people normally wouldn't know about that. And I think just the fact that this provides a mechanism of implementing that will probably have a practical effect. I think it's probably a good bill myself. We've got to cure those two problems, unless you can say we don't have a constitutional problem.
I can't say that.
Okay. I have Mr. Davis and Mr. Davidson.
Well, I guess I'm somewhat concerned about this Section 4 here, future claims. And granted, it would be good to have an expedited method for filing claims, but I also am concerned about somebody gets their money and that they present a situation where it becomes difficult for them to file a new claim if they don't have all the facts, mm-hmm. get them when they're in a hurting position when they don't know what the long-term effects are going to be, or even the cumulative effects of the summer versus maybe the first month of the summer.
The claimant is in a tough position. For instance, it's a fisherman, one particular season's been closed, he's got a definite claim for that. He makes the claim, okay. There are other fishing seasons for which he wants to participate in the future. He doesn't know whether those are going to be closed or not. He doesn't know whether he's going to have a loss. In that kind of a case, it's almost certainly the case that he still has the right to make a claim in the future, because now he can't.
He has the right, but how much does he have to demonstrate that a new claim is based on evidence that could not have been ascertained with reasonable effort?
It's basically going in and arguing that I had no reasonable basis, A, for knowing that Fish and Game was going to close that season, or two, for figuring out what my damages would have been.
I guess, I don't know. I don't have a real high comfort level on this legislation, Mr. Chairman. I understand what you're saying, but I can see that Exxon's not going to have they're going to have their best attorneys there. Are we going to have our best attorneys, or are they going to have their best attorneys on their behalf to make sure that their claim is a true and accurate one? That's my comfort, or lack of comfort in this legislation there, if they do a future claim.
Just so you know, I have Representative Davis and then Representative Wall. Please continue.
Mr. Mertz, if you have a comment on that, it's fine. The other question,
Mr. Mertz, do you wish to answer that?
I have one other question, and if you don't mind.
Sure.
And that has to do with this single arbitrator. Who employs the arbitrator? Or how do they?
Who pays the fees?
How does the arbitrator show up?
Mr. Mertz.
This bill doesn't say, and frankly, I don't know if there is any system under the Uniform Arbitration Act for payment of fees aside from the allocation of costs afterwards.
Any other questions, Mr. Davis?
Just those two?
And on the first one, it is true that the person who goes in there without an attorney and really doesn't know the ins and outs of presenting claims and how claims are divided up could hurt themselves by presenting an incomplete claim. It could come back to hurt them later.
Does that answer your question? I mean, do you have other questions at this point?
I was looking for increased comfort level for Mr. Mertz. I'm sorry. He did give it to me.
Okay. I have Representative Davidson, Representative Gold, and I have one question, and then we'll sort of see if we have consensus or if we want to hold it up. Mr. Davidson.
Three questions. What is the origin of the push? I understand it has come from this body, but does this come from claimant groups? Does it come from the lawyers? Does it come from industry? Does it come from the state? And the second part of the question is, it's my understanding that I don't know how you access the Uniform Arbitration Act. I think, Mr. Chairman, you mentioned that this makes it a little easier and people don't know as much about.
Normally there has to be a contract or an agreement to arbitrate whatever you're claiming.
Oh, I see. So there's no way then that under the circumstances that exists that fishermen could access that act for the purposes of filing a claim against Exxon. Is that true?
Not unless the defendant potentially, the potential defendant were willing to agree, and then they would enter into an agreement that says we're willing to arbitrate under the Uniform Act, and then they'd go and do it.
So,
or an informal agreement.
So if, I guess I'm a little confused on that. So if a fisherman makes a claim, and the only access they have, I mean, the only recourse is the courts or the Uniform Arbitration Act. The industry or Exxon can already go arbitrate with someone. Is that correct,
Ms. Mertz?
That's right. So anybody is free to arbitrate as long as everybody agrees to do it.
So then, in effect, this bill is not really necessary. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't think it's necessary in any sense. It's just a question of whether it expedites the process.
And that's the question. And you're saying that possibly it does expedite the process.
Right.
I guess the next question then, Mr. Chairman, is, I'd like to hear or know what the feelings are of the aggrieved parties, United Fishermen, for example, or the people in Prince William Sound who are directly affected. And I haven't talked to anyone about this from my district either. And I'd like to know, are they in favor of this? Perhaps, Mr. Gray, you've heard testimony on this in the Senate committees?
Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't done elaborate testimony on the brief. It's been watched by, representatives, in Juneau of various fishing industries. I think it was one part of many attentions on what the legislature could do as a result of the Valdez oil spill. And frankly, Senator Kelly thought that this piece of legislation, without really knowing details of arbitration or like that, put the bill in as maybe something that could help people as they determine that their claims are and expedite the process, not have to go through a big court decision there. And if this bill doesn't, do that, then he just sued. I mean, he's not pressing to move it or anything like that. The bill's got to have merit, value in that, and then of course if it doesn't have value, wait or whatever. I mean, that's his attitude.
Other questions?
Well, I guess my only comment then, Mr. Chairman, is that increase the information level of claimants as regards to the Uniform Arbitration Act, and perhaps Exxon and its claimants can already get together under that act and we can save ourselves another few sentences in the statutes. But I don't know. I still don't have a level of comfort.
Other questions? Other members of the committee?
I did have one.
I gather, folks, correct me if I'm wrong, that we don't see any burning need to move this instantly. And if we're going to do it, we need to have a hearing. We certainly could take a look at it over the interim or next year. And is there anybody, Representative Davis?
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt your
No, I think.
I was just curious what our, I don't hate to call them legal beagles, but I was just curious what your staff counsel says, if they had any comments on this legislation.
I don't think it's
bashful as always, they have nothing
to say. It's a burning issue. I mean, I don't think it.
Yeah, it could be handled either way. I mean, you know, make these changes or anything.
So, but I'm not real familiar with this Uniform Arbitration.
By the way, the Uniform Arbitration Act on Attorney's Fees, let me read it to you. It's AS 0943-110, confirmation of, AS 0943-100, fees and expenses of arbitration. Unless otherwise provided in the agreement to arbitrate, the arbitrator's expenses and fees, together with other expenses not including counsel fees incurred in the conduct of the arbitration, shall be paid as provided in the agreement. That's current law.
You know, I'm sort of glad we're bringing this issue up, though, because I really see there will be communities that are going to be, faced with people in those communities faced with trying to come up with settlements or being offered settlements, and I hope that the administration will have someone there to provide some counsel when that happens. Mr. Mertz, do you know if that's sort of on the plan?
Well, the plan calls for us to continue to tread the line between offering ourselves as lawyers to individuals, which we can't do, and making sure the process seems to be generally kosher, which means we've looked at Exxon's claims procedures, we've talked to them, we've looked at the forms they're using for releases, this sort of thing, and done everything we can to encourage a good system that doesn't necessarily take advantage of this.
I guess what I mean, Carl, good to say, Mr. I think at a minimum, it would be good for Department of Law or someone to sort of conduct forums or classes to explain to people, just have workshops in that kind of a process and what that means. What it means when Mr. Exxon or the attorneys for Exxon come in to make settlements. So there's a greater level of greater awareness.
Representatives, in the capital budget that it's under consideration, there is money to Alaska Legal Services to at least assist low-income individuals in the impacted communities with some of their legal needs. So,
but I that's great.
I think
the forums would be really good too.
We have encouraged organizations to go in there and do exactly that. Because they can do it, but we can't.
Great,
folks. Representative Davidson, and then I think we're back.
Mr. Chairman, I'm definitely interested if we have an expeditious claim process before us. If it's a questionable trade-off as to what we get for that expediting the claim process, then I don't know the value of it. But certainly we want people to resolve the conflicts or their problems as quickly as possible, but what's the trade-off in that? If a person has a process, I'm a little concerned about future claims. And so I guess what I'm saying really is we need to take a look at this.
Yeah, we'll take a look at this.
Just one thing I would ask for the record was, if following up on Mike's question, if a person makes a claim and should have known that the cost of fixing whatever it was such and such, should have in the sense that an expert could have maybe determined that, but for one reason or another doesn't have that expert testimony or knowledge or whatever it is, and they go in and they make a claim that is substantially inaccurate, and then there's a finding based on that. If I understand what you said, they really can't go back and say I was wrong.
Is that right? They're stuck with it.
I guess that is something I'd like to see fixed up in the bill some way. I'm not sure how, but maybe you can give it some thought.
Thank you very much. We'll just hold this for further consideration. Time is now 1:08. And thank you very much. This meeting's adjourned. That's the end for the year, folks.
Hey, you want to hear a story about this guy was in a
you want to turn this off?
He was in a Greyhound bus. This guy's a big guy. He's in a Greyhound bus. The bus flipped over.